We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 2nd canto, 2nd chapter, verses 1 to 7. Sri Shuka Uvacha, Evam Prataravana Yatmayani, Nastam Smitim Patya Bhavutya Tishtat, Vatasa Sarsitam Amokadishti, Yatapya Yad Prag Vyavasaya Bhuti. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, formerly, prior to the manifestation of the cosmos, Lord Brahma, by meditating on the Virat Rup, regained his lost consciousness by appeasing the Lord. Thus he was able to rebuild the creation as it was before.
Mukam karati vachalam bangam langhayate girim yakipam tamaham vande shi gurum dinatavinam om agyana timranasya gyananjana sharakaya Chakshuramiritam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha.
So Shukadev has described favorable conditions for one on the spiritual path. At the end of life, one must leave home. Because why? Why must we leave home? Why does Shukadev say we must leave home? Become detached, yes. And the purpose behind becoming detached, why should we become detached? Yes, Abhidhanna? Become attached to Krishna. Yes. So it was stressed that we have to change our desires. So now our desires are focused on material enjoyment. So we change our desires to pleasing Krishna. So that's the purpose. When we're at home, we arrange our environment very nicely to satisfy our desires. Every little thing is there just so we can enjoy, to fulfill desires of the body. So we must leave, become detached, according to Shukadev. Chant Om. If you cannot chant Hare Krishna, chant Om at least, and leave home. Sit in your asana, do pranayama. The Shukadev is describing the impersonalist path. And he's trying to bring them from monism to the vision of seeing Krishna in everything. So the impersonalists believe that everything is all one energy, Brahman. So Shukadev is trying to make them understand whose energy it is. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita about his material energy? Divine, Madhavendrapuri. Yes, he is controlling the energy. Also in chapter 7, Bhumirapo Nalovayu, Kamano Bhutirevacha, he says, this is my energy. Me bhina prakriti rashtata. So it's my energy. So this is the lesson that the impersonalists must learn, and that there is form, and the Lord has form. So Virat Rup means form, form of Virat. This is the Lord's form, made of his energy. We have to understand, as Shukadev described, how all the planets cover the universal form from head to foot, how Varnasham is related to Visharup, the Brahman is his face, the Shudras his legs, how the rivers are his veins, how the ocean his belly, how his mouth the blazing fire, and his smile how he allures through the material energy and then eats everyone up with his jaws of death, Yamaraj. And we especially we have to understand how the parts of the Virat Rup relate to the whole. And then we can gradually develop the service attitude. So Lord Brahma, he had this picture of the Virat Rup, and he could see how the parts relate to the whole and where all the planets are situated. And therefore he was able to create. He could recreate the creation. Because every morning when he wakes up he forgets again. We'll hear about this in the purport. How Lord Brahma forgets. So this description of the Virat Rup is the first step in God realization. So now in the second chapter, Shukadeva is going to explain the second step in God realization. We're going to change our meditation from external to internal form of the Lord. The external is the form of Vishnu. The Virat Rup is the external form of Lord Vishnu. And now Paramatma in the heart is the internal form of Lord Vishnu, which we will hear about in this chapter. So this purport, Prabhupada says that The example cited herein of Shri Brahmaji is one of forgetfulness. But how is it possible Brahma forgets? He's the creator of this universe. How can he forget? Why? Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes, okay. One explanation is that Krishna says, Mata smriti gyanam apohanam cha, Bhagavad Gita, forgetfulness comes from me. So he gives forgetfulness here. What's another reason why, Amaram Gopa? He's a jiva. So therefore, even Brahma is under the laws of nature, of the nature that he himself is working with. He is being controlled. The creator is also under the laws of material nature. Very interesting. Especially because he's an incarnation, Prabhupada says here. Brahmaji is the incarnation of one of the mundane attributes of the Lord. Being the incarnation of passion mode, he's empowered by the Lord to generate the beautiful material manifestation. Yet, due to his being one of the numerous living entities, he's apt to forget the art of his creative energy. Just imagine, he creates, again he forgets how to create. Of course, it's a very difficult job to create. This forgetfulness of the living being, beginning from Brahma down to the lowest, insignificant ant, is a tendency which can be counteracted by meditation on the Virat Rupa of the Lord. This chance is available in a human form of life, and if a human being follows the instruction of Srimad Bhagavatam and begins to meditate upon the Virat Rupa, then revival of his pure consciousness and counteraction of the tendency to forget his eternal relationship with the Lord can follow simultaneously. And as soon as this forgetfulness is removed, Vyavasaya Buddhi, as mentioned here and in Bhagavad Gita, follows at once. What is this Vyavasaya Buddhi? Darshan and then Maji. Tadami Buddhi Yogam Cham, Tam, sorry, yes. Yes, what else? Single-minded focus on Krishna. Vyavasaya Buddhi. So this is the result of meditation on Virat Rupa. This ascertained knowledge of a living being leads to loving service to the Lord, which a living being requires. The kingdom of God is unlimited. Therefore, the number of assisting hands of the Lord is also unlimited. So what does this mean for us? Vishakha. Okay, there's enough service for everyone. We shouldn't be envious of anyone. There's enough service. Krishna is unlimited. Amalagora. No unemployment. There's something for us to do. Madri. There's so many servants and our service is insignificant. Madhavendrapuri. Okay. Okay, we can also be assisted in our service. To be helped, yes. And we are being. Yes, yes. Nobody is independent. We are being helped. One thing I thought of when I read this was that that the number of assisting hands of the Lord is unlimited. That means in the kingdom of God, there's a place for us also. That we have a place there with Krishna. Yes, no unemployment. Here or there. You don't have to worry about finishing our work, because it's never finished. The Bhagavad Gita 13:14 asserts, the Lord has his hands, legs, eyes, and mouths in every nook and corner of his creation. This means that the expansions of differentiated parts and parcels called jivas or living entities are assisting hands of the Lord, and all of them are meant for rendering a particular pattern of service to the Lord. So all the hands and legs we see in this room or anywhere, they belong to Krishna. That was Arjuna's misunderstanding at the beginning of Gita. He thought, these hands and legs belong to my family, so therefore they should be used in the service of my relatives. He didn't want to serve Krishna. But Krishna removed his illusion. He said, no, these are not your hands and legs. These are my hands and legs, and they should be used in my service. So the verses, the next verses we're going to hear, verses 2 to 5, again, he's going to emphasize the need for renunciation again and again, just like we heard in the beginning of the first chapter, that you have to leave home, become detached. So again, we're going to hear the beginning of this chapter, the need for renunciation, for the following this path. Verse 2. Especially, he's going to speak very strongly because Parikshit has no time to make mistakes. He can't waste any time. So again, he's going to say, of course, Parikshit already renounced. But anyway, he's going to say it again. And here we have to also renounce the Vedas here. Verse 2. The way of presentation of the Vedic sounds is so bewildering that it directs the intelligence of the people to meaningless things like the heavenly kingdoms. The conditioned souls hover in dreams of such heavenly illusory pleasures. But actually, they do not relish any tangible happiness in such places. So there was a story in Mahabharata, about one person who was a very pious householder. And he used to subsist by getting grains from the fields, just picking up fallen grains after they harvest the crops. And with the grains he got, he used to, six months out of the year, he would feed guests and perform sacrifices and do different things. So even the demigods used to come and eat from his house, because it was a very wonderful occurrence that no matter how much he had, maybe very little grains, but it expanded so that everyone could eat, no matter how many people came. But one time, Durvasa Muni came. And you know what? This means trouble. So Durvasa Muni came. He ate everything in the house. And nothing could satisfy him. So then he went out, the Grihastha went out and collected grains again, came back, cooked again. He ate everything. Again, he went out. Six times he went out. And finally, there was nothing left for the poor man and his family. And Durvasa left very happy and satisfied that he got all the food. So this happens often, that Durvasa tests people. But then, after that, an airplane appeared in the sky, and the messenger said, "Oh, you are ready to come to heaven. We are ready to take you to heaven because you have earned great merit by feeding guests." So even because he was doing it even at the expense of his own family. So then this person said, "Well, before I go, I want to know, what's it like in heaven?" And the messenger said, "You're so foolish. Everyone wants to go to heaven." And he said, "No, I want to know what the advantages and what are the disadvantages." And so then the messenger said, "Yes, the advantages are you don't sweat. You have a garland that never fades. You can enjoy unlimitedly with the ladies. And you have a beautiful place to stay. And you don't feel hungry or thirsty or anything like that." He said, "Okay, so what are the disadvantages now? Tell me." So the messenger said, "Yes, when you go to heaven, you can only stay there as long as your pious activities merit your stay." And he said, "And when it's time for you to fall, then your garland fades, you lose your luster, and they throw you down from heaven. And you feel great anxiety and fear, and then you have to come back to the earth and be born in the womb of some mother." So then this person, the Grihastha, he said, "No, I don't want to go to heaven because of its disadvantages. If you can tell me some place where if I go I won't have to come back here, then tell me about that place." So then the messenger said, "Yes, there is a place like that. It's the place of Lord Vishnu." And so the Grihastha said, "Okay, goodbye. I'm going to stay here and I'll do bhakti yoga." He instructed him, "You do bhakti yoga." And he did that and he went back to Godhead. And so this is what Shukadeva is saying here, that this heavenly kingdom, it's illusory. You cannot stay there. Prabhupada says here, and it's like a Ferris wheel. The Ferris wheel goes up, comes down, goes up, comes. So you perform sacrifice, you get up there, your pious activities are finished, you come back down. And so what's the use? Krishna says in Gita, "Gata gatam," that you go and you come. Going and coming, going and coming. So Shukadeva also, he's instructing, "Now you're preparing for death. Don't listen to these Vedic rituals. You cannot now, you have to be very serious. You can't think about these things. Time of death, you can't, so many things you forget about when you're going to die. You don't worry anymore about, you know, what the servants are doing or whatever. Or your clothes are clean, you're washed. So many things that we normally think about if the lunch is ready. You know, when you're going to die, so many thoughts go out of your mind automatically. So now he's trying to focus Parikshit. This, you don't think about this anymore. Because as a king, he had to perform pious ritualistic sacrifices. So Prabhupada Saraswati, I think Prabhupada quotes him maybe in this purport, that he says that Kaivayam Narakayate, maybe he doesn't, but Prabhupada used to quote him often, that the heavenly kingdoms is like a flower in the sky. What is that? Akash Pushpa. Akash Pushpa. There is no such thing as a flower in the sky. So this is the heavenly planets. Actually, who else was speaking strongly like this in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam about don't talk about this, these rituals of the Vedas? Narada Muni. Yes, he chastised him. He says, why are you misleading the people? You're compromising spirit, Prabhupada said. You're encouraging people to perform these sacrifices for material enjoyment. This is not good. So I remember clearly in 1969 when America, they showed a picture on the TV of the Americans stepping on the moon. And then as soon as the American people heard about going to the moon, then there's this one airline, Pan Am airline, they started selling tickets for going to the moon in 1999. That was 30 years. They figured, okay, by 1999 we'll have regular transport to the moon and back. So people were buying tickets to the moon in 1969. I remember. They were very expensive. So somebody made a lot of money. But you see, the people want to go to the heavenly planets. Even as early as 1969, and Prabhupada wrote the book Easy Journey to Other Planets. And so he was telling, you cannot buy a ticket, but you can go by your pious activities, but not like this. So, but even this is being rejected now, going to the heavenly planets. So verse 3, for this reason, the enlightened person should endeavor only for the minimum necessities of life while in the world of names. He should be intelligently fixed and never endeavor for unwanted things, being competent to perceive practically that all such endeavors are merely hard labor for nothing. So remember in the first canto, there is a verse how we should, it says that we should simply endeavor for the minimum. Again, what is that verse? What? Oh yeah, okay. 1 to 10. Not 10. Yeah, 1 to 10. Yeah, yes. Jivasya tatvajigyasya. 1 to 10, yeah. That one again. So the same thing Shukadeva is saying, the same thing as Sutta said. That's simply enough to maintain your body. So how is it a world of names? Why is he saying world of names? Yes.
It's all a combination of those bothered by air, ether, and the label of form.
Okay, we call it, it's a combination of certain things, and we call it by name, yes.
No substance.
No substance, yes.
No real substance for the soul.
No real substance for the soul. And it's also, another reason is because it's temporary. It's forgotten in due course of time. So let's see what Prabhupada says here. Again, he's talking about the crazy people of this world. This is near the beginning, about 8 lines down. Those who are captivated by the illusory advancement of material civilization following the way of phantasmagoria are certainly madmen. The whole material creation is a jugglery of names only. Jugglery, because you can name it one thing, and then the form changes, and then it becomes another name, and then the form changes, and it becomes another name. the names keeps changing, and so you have to keep changing the names. So it's like juggling, that the forms are changing. In fact, it is nothing but a bewildering creation of matter, like earth, water, and fire. Remember the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. What are the words? Earth, water, fire. Tejo Vari Midam. Yes. So that's just the same thing he's referring to. Prabhupada is referring to here in this purport. It's just Tejo Vari Midam. The buildings, furniture, cars, bungalows, mills, factories, industries, peace, war, or even the highest perfection of material science, namely atomic energy and electronics, are all simply bewildering names of material elements with their concomitant reactions of the three modes. Yes. Since a devotee of the Lord knows them perfectly well, he is not interested in creating unwanted things for a situation which is not at all reality, but simply names of no more significance than the babble of sea waves. Yes, you have a relationship with someone, it's love. The relationship changes, it becomes hate, or it becomes fear, or it becomes anger, so many things. I was living this summer next to the ocean, right on the ocean, on the beach, for 2 months. And if you live on the beach, you hear the waves constantly, day and night. You just constantly hear the waves, so it's in the back of your mind. But you don't pay attention, because it has no meaning for you. So I was thinking, I was studying actually these verses when I was on the beach. And so I could understand what Prabhupada was talking about and how he said in that other purport that your family is just like bubbles, because you see the bubbles coming up and then they vanish in a few seconds. So these waves, they have no meaning. So I was thinking, we come into this world and while we're here, we make so many waves. We have plans, we have big buildings, we have big plans. But after we leave, what's left of all these? It's like waves, Abhinanda. Yes. Yes. We have the bubble blower that the children has. And they chase after the bubbles for some time, but then the bubble bursts. Yes, little Madhuri. Yes. That's true. So they are different. Yes, grihastha life is different from brihamedi life. But even that you'll have to leave at the time of death. Yamaraj will not be kind. He will not say, okay, you're a devotee, you don't have to. You can take your family with you. It's all right. No, you have to leave everything. Time of death. So what happens? What's left of us after we leave? Prabhupada said simply, what? Yes, simply a name and a long list of names. That's what's left. And this is also Bhumi Devi, in the 12th canto. She says that all these kshatriyas, they come and they go, but all that's left is a name and a long list of names. You study the dynasties, you see all these names, but where are they now? We don't know. So therefore, again, we have another therefore here. Ata, for this reason. Because it's temporary. Because it's illusory. Because there's no happiness, as it says in verse 2. Ata, therefore, the enlightened person should endeavor only for the minimum necessities of life. So this is realization. If you have the realization that everything is, that it's temporary, that we should not go after it, that there's no happiness there, then this is how we will act, according to Shukadeva Goswami. If a realized soul, an enlightened person, he will endeavor only for the minimum necessities of life in this world of names. He will not endeavor for unwanted things because he sees that such endeavors are hard labor for nothing. So this verse is talking about realization. A person who has understood what Shukadeva has said in the second verse, how will he act in the third verse? So this is practical application. If we understand, actually, if we have realized verse 2, then it will show in our actions in verse 3. Verse 3 will be how we actually put this into practice. If we have realized that this world is simply a world of names, it's temporary, it's illusory, there's no happiness, then we'll simply act in this way. So often we read Bhagavad Gita, we read different things. And like, for example, verse 14 in Bhagavad Gita, it says, Matra sparshast konteya, that this shitosna sukadukadaha, happiness and distress are like change of seasons. And they arise only from sense perception. So therefore, then he tells Arjuna, if you have this understanding of how everything it arises from sense perception, it comes and goes, how will you act in this world? If you have this realization, what does Krishna say to Arjuna? If you know, like this, that everything comes from sense perception, that it comes and goes, yes. Yes, tamstitikshasabharata. If you have this understanding, then this is how you will act. You will tolerate. So all this Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, we read, we hear so many things, but there's also very practical instruction here. If we actually accept these principles, if we actually believe, if we're actually convinced of what Krishna is saying, of what Shukadeva is saying, then this is how we will act. They're teaching us, you will act like this. This is how the enlightened person acts. He endeavors only for the minimum necessities of life in the world of names. Now, about two-thirds down, a little bit before the middle, Prabhupada says, the great kings, leaders, and soldiers fight with one another in order to perpetuate their names in history. So people want their names to be written down in the history books. But of what use is it after they leave? They are forgotten in due course of time, and they make a place for another era in history. But the devotee realizes how much history and historical persons are useless products of flickering time. So then we'll skip some lines. Therefore, the transcendentalist desiring freedom from the clutches of Maya or the illusory activities of life is warned herewith not to be captivated by the external features of fruitive actors. Human life is never meant for sense gratification. Kamasya nandriya pritir, that verse again. But for self-realization, jivasya tatra jigyasa. Yes, Srimad Bhagavatam instructs us solely on this subject from the very beginning to the end. Human life is simply meant for self-realization. Transcendentalist is specifically warned herewith. Now this is, sorry, this I'm skipping some here. I think I'm going, where is that? It's about 12 lines up from the bottom. Yeah, that's where I am. I skipped some here. The transcendentalist is 12 lines up from the bottom. Transcendentalist is specifically warned herewith to be fixed in mind so that even if there is difficulty in plain living and high thinking, he will not budge even an inch from his stark determination. So this is for us. Of course, we may not be feeling the difficulty at the present time, but there may be times in the past or there may be times in the future when we will feel the pinch of plain living and high thinking. So Prabhupada is telling us this is for us. We must not budge an inch from our determination for Krishna consciousness. So it's difficult living in this world, so many things to distract us, but we must keep our determination. So then you may say, well, okay, we'll leave everything behind, we'll just do the minimum, but where will our food and shelter come from and how will we live? So Shukadeva answers. When there are ample earthly flats to lie on, what is the necessity of cots and beds? When one can use his own arms, what is the necessity of a pillow? When one can use the palms of his hands, what is the necessity of varieties of utensils? When there is ample covering or the skins of trees, what is the necessity of clothing? So in the purport, I want to go down about two-thirds, down, about one-third from the end. It starts with great sages and saints. Great sages and saints in the days of yore were not living in palatial buildings, furnished with good furniture and so-called amenities of life. They used to live in huts and groves and sit on the flat ground, yet they have left immense treasures of high knowledge without perfection. Sri Rupa Goswami and Sri Sanatana Goswami were high-ranking ministers of state, but they were able to leave behind them immense writings and transcendental knowledge while residing only for one night underneath one tree. They did not even live two nights under the same tree, and want to speak of well-furnished rooms with modern amenities. So that's real sannyas. You're not supposed to stay more than 3 days in one place, so they didn't even stay one night. They changed trees every night. Otherwise, they might get attached, right, to the tree. To the one tree was better than the other. So anyway, they did not even stay under the same tree. Still, they were able to give us most important literatures of self-realization. And we need so many facilities. So, how does this apply to us? Does it apply? Should we just get the skins of trees and sleep on the earth in Shingnanda? Or live in a... Yes, he said in Mayapur. He said that we don't have to build this temple, we can just sit here in the open ground under a tree, but who is going to come and listen if we don't build this building? Avinanda? What? New Mayapur in France, he said the same thing. Oh, so Srila Prabhupada, when he came to visit the castle, he didn't go in the castle, he sat under the tree to give Bhagavatam class. Yes, Sankirtanas. That's a very good point. Whatever comforts Krishna gives us, it should not be the source of our happiness or our satisfaction. Madhuri. Yes, we should not be dependent on material facilities for our preaching. That's true. Okay? Avadhut Priya. Traveling Sankirtan. When they do traveling Sankirtan, every night they sleep in a different car park. So this is austerity, yes. Don't get attached to your car park. Parvati. Kenya. 28 years ago. You had to preach without books. Right, that's all we had. In India, we didn't have books. It was very hard to get books here. Maybe not until 75 did we start getting Bhagavatams. All we have is like first canto and second canto for years. Yes, Vishaka? Yes, we get more. Yeah, that's a good comment. Yes. Living in India, it's you get that chance often. Right. Fortunate VIHE is still trying to live simply. and next year we may not even have a classroom, so we might be under a different tree every day. Parvati. Yeah, met plenty of trees. We're planting trees for next year for our classroom. Right. Right. Yes. Good. Okay. Well, I just remembered one thing in the early days, just to give you an example. It was very austere, And we were sleeping on the floor. There was no beds, for sure. First 18 years I was a devotee, I didn't have a bed. And then I got my baby, when I got pregnant, then I couldn't get up off the floor, so I had to get a bed. It's the first time. But actually, we were on the bed, we were on the floor, and we didn't have pillows, and in India at least. I don't know about the West. But we had those, no, in the West also. Yeah, it was like that. And in New York Temple, I went through New York Temple, and I was sure glad I didn't live there, because one of the things, one really austere thing they used to do was you put your laundry in the washing machine, and then whatever came out, you just wore. Everybody just took whatever came out. So that system was, anyway, it was one of the austere systems of the early days. But anyway, these things. Oh, yeah, actually, there was one really nice example of devotees. The devotees who started the Gujarat farm here in Gujarat was a Grihastha couple. And they went to the farm, and there was no building, and they were just living under a tree. The husband, wife, and the child was 4 years old, girl. So they were living under the tree. And then every day they were just living. People would bring them food, sabjis, and then monsoon came. And so they were still living under the tree. And then so the rain started coming, and he just started kirtan with his harmonium in the rain. And after some time, news got around. And then one rich man came and said, "Oh, I'll build you a house, don't worry." And so devotees were like that in the early days. They didn't care. They just went out, "Okay, we got to start the farm here. There's no house, don't worry, we just go under the tree." No, of course, no money, no nothing. But this was the early days. So, okay, we'll go on. Verse 5. Are there no torn clothes lying on the common road? Do the trees, which exist for maintaining others, no longer give alms and charity? Do the rivers, being dried up, no longer supply water to the thirsty? Are the caves of the mountains now closed? Or above all, does the Almighty Lord not protect the fully surrendered souls? Why then do the learned sages go to flatter those who are intoxicated by hard-earned wealth? So actually, if we ask these questions, the answer would be, yes, there are no. These things are not here, actually, in Kali Yuga. Actually, in our civilization, we've advanced so much that we don't have these things anymore, that you could just walk out and get fruits from the trees or drink from the rivers. This is the advancement of Kali Yuga. Advancement of Western civilization has advanced so nicely that it's not possible to get these things nowadays. And Prabhupada, he was lecturing on Dwarka, how it was so beautiful. Nice, they would plant nice fruit and flower trees along the road. He said in the West, the people plant impious trees that give no fruits and flowers. They plant those trees on the road. And so this is our civilization now. But, of course, the main principle here in this verse is that the Almighty Lord does protect the fully surrendered souls. So even if these things are not there, we can still depend on Krishna, even now, in this age of Kali. So now there's some very nice things. Prabhupada explains all about what it means to be sannyas. And unfortunately, Maharaj didn't come today. We could have asked him for some nice details. But anyway, we will just take from the purport near the beginning, about 12 lines down. Well, before I read this, who can tell me what are the duties of a sannyasi? Darshan? Write books. That's what Prabhupada says. Yes, Nishinga. Preach door to door, Madhavendra Puri. Yes, 16.5. You mean 16.1, you mean? Yeah. Abhayam. Yeah, Gyana Yoga Vivastiti. The third one, Sattva Sangshuti. Abhayam Sattva Sangshuti, Gyana Yoga Vivastiti. Right, self-purification, fearlessness. And, cultivation of knowledge, of spiritual knowledge. So these are the duties explained by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada says here, in this purport, the first duty of a person in the renounced order of life is to contribute some literary work for the benefit of the human being in order to give him realized direction toward self-realization. Now here's the next duty. This is wonderful. Amongst the other duties in the renounced order of life of Srila Sanatana, Srila Rupa, and the other Goswamis of Vrindavan, the foremost duty discharged by them was to hold learned discourses amongst themselves at Seva Kunj Vrindavan, the spot where Sri Radha Damodar Temple was established by Srila Jiva Goswami and where the actual Samadhi tombs of Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Jiva Goswami are laid. Foremost duty of a sannyasi is to hold learned discourses in Srimad Bhagavatam, or learned discourses amongst themselves. Oh, people can come also. Why not? No, not exclusive, but at least they must be there. At least they are discussing with each other, and people can come. Just you hear anything. You know, it was Maharaj Pariksit and Shukadev, but look at everybody else came too. As soon as they hear it's happening, they all come. So I'm sure at Seva Kunj there were a lot of people there listening, and also visitors perhaps from other parts of this universe were there listening to the learned discourses. Yes. Right. Yes. That's a nice thing about India also. People, they come to hear. They like to hear. So this is the foremost duty of the sannyasis. So actually, in connection with this, depending on Krishna, I read an interesting story about how somebody actually did this in India a few years ago. This is written by a devotee before he became a devotee. He was a foreigner, and he went to Banaras, and he decided that he was going to, and not only decided, he did give away everything, all his money, his shoes, his bag, all his belongings he gave away to the beggars, and he decided just to walk down the bank of the Ganga and depend on the Lord. He didn't know who the Lord was, but actually he was thinking to depend on Mother Ganga for everything. So he wanted to be free of all his possessions, he just wanted to depend on the Ganga, and he went. And so I'll just tell you part of the story, that he was walking and he was getting hungry, it was noontime. And he thought, okay, let's see what happens. And then out of the blue, some guy comes with a big lota full of dahi and sugarcane juice. And he had six glasses full, and then he was full, and he went to sleep. So then he keeps walking, and the villages are really, really wonderful. And he said, then he went to one village, and he saw one sadhu there. And the sadhu was doing the same thing. He asked him, well, why? Oh, Maharaj came. Jai, Maharaj. We'll ask you a question after this story. So this sadhu was sitting in one village, and he asked him, why are you walking along the banks of the Ganga? So then the person said, oh, I just want to be free of all my possessions and depend on Ganga. And then this sadhu said to him, yes, of course. He said, I also used to do this, but after some time I prefer to walk along the banks of the mind. Then he said, but anyway, of course you don't need money and God will provide everything for your needs. And then he looked at the sadhu, he said it was obvious that after 20 years of not touching money, God had certainly provided everything for him. So then he preached to him, he said, when you were a small boy, your mother gave you everything, and Mother Ganga will give you everything, keep on giving you everything. So then he kept on walking, and this was his experience. He said, every village along the path was very amazing. Nearly every place I passed through, stayed at, or took prasad, the people wanted to build me a hut, give me a cow, etc., etc., etc. So this is quite amazing. This is just a few years ago. A few years ago this happened, he's writing. He says, and there were many beautiful spots that were ideal to spend the rest of one's life in. However, it would have ended up to be a bit of an entanglement. The idea was freedom and non-attachment. So then he was talking about, he said, I never actually went hungry once in these months that turned into years along the Ganga. The most amazing thing is the villages would give me so much food and various sweets made from gur and grains, but carrying them was a burden. So he said, when I would come to a new village, I would give everything away to the children. And then he'd pick up more on the way. And so this is a real story. He said, I had nothing, yet I could give away food. He said, how amazing is this God who is taking care of me? Yeah, this is a story about a devotee before he became a devotee, and he was walking along the Ganga and just depending on God and on Mother Ganga. I don't know, he's Videshi. Yeah, foreigner. Yeah. I know. And I remember one story, one of his stories was he went to one village and the school teacher said, oh, you're a foreigner, you have no shoes and no bag? He says, come to my house. And I suppose you also have no money? He said, yes. He said, okay, you come to my house for breakfast. So the next day he went, 6 sabjis, 6 kinds of dals, 3 kinds of rice, all kinds of things. And he couldn't believe it, breakfast. And he said, my wife stayed up all night cooking for you. So this is how Krishna provides. He didn't know Krishna, but he was thinking that this is Mother Ganga. He said, at times I got tired of people pampering me in every village and always being full. Many times I felt the need to be alone. At one point I stayed alone between villages from 3 to 4 days, which also meant 3 to 4 days without eating, only fasting on Ganga water. At that time, I was also practicing Hatha Yoga and wearing just underwear, while 2 pieces of bright yellow cloth were lying on the bank drying. The nearest village or even tree was a few kilometers away, but the cloth must have attracted someone because in the distance was a small speck coming towards me. At first, I thought it was someone coming. Oh, it was a man carrying a large plate. At first, I thought it was someone coming to do puja in the Ganga, but why does he have to come where I am? There are miles and miles of empty sand. No, he was heading right for me. And getting closer, it was plain to see he was carrying a huge plate full of fruit prasad. And what a feast. There must have been 10 preparations, all for me, it seemed. He just laid it down and beckoned me to eat. He never spoke a word, which is very unusual for an Indian. He never asked me where I came from or where I was going, my name, my country, nothing. It was quite amazing. Especially, you know, these are the questions that people ask. First questions. So, after the excellent meal was over, he took the plate, washed it in the Ganga, and walked off across the empty sand to the trees and became a speck again. I prayed to my eternal mother, Ganga, for this prasad and thanked her. Incredible! Food was not the only thing, Ganga. Ganga mud for washing your body was far superior to soap. And of course, all the way along the path were neem trees, the twigs of which you can clean your teeth with. So here's an experience of a person who lived like this, according to this verse, Srimad Bhagavatam, and then he became a devotee later. He said years and years he lived like this, walking on the Ganga. Yes? Who? Yes. Yes, who will give me food? Yes. His name is Gaurahari, and I took this story from the book. It's called Ganga. Jai Vijay's book. It's in the back, and the name of the story, he has realizations from different devotees. So this one is called Surrendering Oneself to Mother Ganga. And it's talking, and I just took a very small part of the story. There's a lot more to it. But he threw his passport, he threw everything in the Ganga. Yeah. He tore it in pieces, yes. I guess so. Yeah, after becoming a devotee, you become more sensible. I'm sure he got his everything back now. His film, he had 12 rolls of film, he threw them in the Ganga, film of the Himalayas. And he said he regretted it after, when he became a devotee. So it's funny. Before he was a devotee, he was like this. And now, of course, we don't know. Of course, anyway, now it's Yukti Vairagya. Yukti Vairagya Prabhu. So anyway, it's very interesting because I was thinking, well, is it possible to live like this now? So this person seemed to have done it for years and years. Okay, so now Prabhupada in his lecture on this verse, or actually in a room conversation, and he was talking about this verse 5. We're on verse 5. He said that In other words, devotional service can be discharged in any condition. So we may not have shoes. I know when I was in Calcutta Temple, I didn't have shoes because I was the pujari. And my temple president, Gargamuni Prabhu, told me I didn't need shoes because I should just stay with the deities. So these were austere days. Anyway, so Yukta Vairagya. Now, Prabhupada had a conversation with a professor. His name is Dr. Copeland. And Prabhupada was saying that at Kumbh Mela, he said, I've seen, they take bath in the Ganga, they sit down, they chant Hare Krishna, and they don't care where their food is coming from. He said, there's many people like that still. They just chant, and they don't worry, and food comes to them. Prabhupada said, everything is coming still in India. If there is information in the remotest village, a saintly person has come, they will approach and say, Baba, what can I do for you? So Dr. Copeland at this point asked Prabhupada, have you done that? Have you wandered around from village to village? And Prabhupada said, not village to village, but town to town, even in the foreign countries. So Prabhupada said, because he went to Butler, then he went to New York with nothing, practically. So Prabhupada has done that, depending on Krishna. So this is sannyas. So Maharaj, would you like to enlighten us with a few words of the duties of a sannyasi? We talked about the purport, how he has to write books and he has to hold learned discourses. If you like, you can say something. If you don't, you don't have to. Good. Tell others.
Travel and tell others
what enlivens him in devotional service. So that inspires the devotees. Great. Okay. It's the duties of the sannyasi. End of the purport. Prabhupada says, a sannyasi should always live alone without company, and he must be fearless. He should never be afraid of living alone, although he is never alone. The Lord is residing in everyone's heart, and unless one is purified by the prescribed process, one will feel that he is alone. But a man in the renounced order of life must be purified by the process. Thus he will feel the presence of the Lord everywhere and will have nothing to fear, such as being without any company. Everyone can become a fearless and honest person if his very existence is purified by discharging prescribed duty for each and every order of life. So not only sannyasis, everyone can attain this stage. One can become fixed in one's prescribed duty by faithful oral reception of Vedic instructions and assimilation of the essence of Vedic knowledge by devotional service to the Lord. Yes. Abhayam sabasang. Yes. Here Prabhupada's talking about purification of existence also. So verse 6. Thus being fixed, one must render service unto the Supersoul situated in one's own heart by his omnipotency. Because he is the almighty personality of Godhead, eternal and unlimited. He is the ultimate goal of life. And by worshipping him, one can end the cause of the conditioned state of existence. So Prabhupada in the purport, about two-thirds down, talks about how it starts with similarly. It's way down. It's probably closer to the end. What's about two-thirds? Similarly, because we are all part and parcel of the Lord is always affectionate to us, and he always tries to get us back home, back to Godhead. But we, the conditioned souls, do not care for him, and run instead after the illusory bodily connections. So that's described later on. Mayam rigam, that the conditioned soul is running after Maya, the deer of Maya, the beautiful illusory deer. And Lord Chaitanya, he's chasing after the conditioned souls. So, but we don't want to be caught by Lord Chaitanya. Instead, we want to be caught by the illusory energy. It's very unfortunate. So Prabhupada continues. This is later on. We must therefore, I don't know exactly where this is. Oh yeah, yes, it's right there. We must therefore extricate ourselves from all illusory connections of the world and seek reunion with the Lord, trying to render service unto him because he is the ultimate truth. Actually, we are hankering after him as a child seeks the mother. And to search out the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we need not go anywhere else. because the Lord is within our hearts. So this is very nice. This does not suggest, however, we should not go to the places of worship, namely the temples, churches, and mosques. Such holy places of worship are also occupied by the Lord, because the Lord is omnipresent. For the common man, these holy places are centers of learning about the science of God. Sometimes my son says to me, I say, please, can you make the offering to Krishna? He says, Krishna is everywhere, so I will just offer here. He says, you don't see? I said, no, I don't see. Anyway, I think it's more laziness, but we have to defeat that philosophy. So Prabhupada defeats that philosophy here, that we cannot see Krishna everywhere. So, and another point, a very important point, Prabhupada wanted these temples to be centers of learning. Every single temple, he wanted to be a center of learning. And when I joined, it was a real center of learning for me in Boston. Many wonderful devotees were there. Satsrup Maharaj was our president. Ridananda, they were all Prabhus then. He was our temple commander. Giriraj was our Sankirtan leader. And it was quite a temple. Jai Doita was in charge of the press work. So we had, there were so many Maharajas were there in that temple. So it was very enlivening, classes and everything. So it was a real center of learning. I remember, and Jadarani was there, and I learned the whole Bhagavad Gita within 2 months. I remember that was kind of the standard. You had to learn all the philosophy. Prabhupada wanted this. So if your temple is not a center of learning, when you leave from here, you should make it one. You should make it a center of learning. This is Prabhupada's desire. Consequently, the mass of people gradually become godless, and a godless civilization is the result. Most of the temples in India are not places of learning. So people are not kirtan. Prabhupada says, if we at all want to end this, follow the principles of revealed scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam and follow the instruction of a person like Shishukadev Goswami who has no attraction for material gain. So then the last verse, verse 7. Who else but the gross materialists will neglect such transcendental thought and take to the non-permanent names only, seeing the mass of people fallen in the river of suffering as a consequence of accruing the result of their own work? So again, Prabhupada talks about the analogy of the prison house, and we can understand how it's a river of suffering in this world. The mass of people have fallen in the river of suffering because of their karma. So only the gross materialists will neglect the message of Shukadeva Goswami. So unfortunately, many people think that we can enjoy here, but the problem is, you try to enjoy, but as long as you enjoy, don't look at the old people, because one day you'll become one. Don't look at the hospitals, because you may be one day. Don't look at all the sick people, the people who have lost their jobs. Don't look at the beggars, don't look at the homeless. They're not enjoying. So people, especially in the West, they don't see suffering. They're very selective about seeing suffering. They don't see, like here in India, it's all out there. The crippled people, the blind, the lame, people with leprosy, the hands are falling off. In the West, you don't see these things. In death, you see death here, and in Vrindavan, where they burn the bodies. But people, they don't want to see this, and so they run after illusory names, forgetting about these things. So Shukadeva is trying to tell us that this human life is meant for searching after Krishna, Supersoul in our hearts, and the deity in the temple, Prabhupada says. So to help us in this search, we should not accumulate things, but act only for the bare necessities of life, depending on Krishna. So any questions or comments on this chapter or verses? Tomorrow we'll hear about the meditation on the Super Soul. Yes? Oh, yeah. There's a lot of cultural. Actually, when I joined in 1970, the standard was every Sunday there had to be a drama. That was the standard for practically every temple, at least my temple. There must be a Sunday feast and a drama that goes with it. So, everywhere except in India, of course. India was different. But in the West, that was the standard. That these cultural, and that was so attractive. Because things, you couldn't, sometimes you didn't know what the chanting meant, you couldn't understand the philosophy, but the dramas were very real. Who is that? In Vrindavan. In Vrindavan. There should be a drama every day. This is the standard that Prabhupada wanted. But it was, yes, it was very nice. These dramas were so enlivening. Puppet shows, dramas, different culture. And that's what we need more. What we need more of. Any other comments or questions on this? Yes. You have the graveyards. So she was visiting a graveyard with her grandfather. Here lies my dead husband, and by dying, finally he gave me a break. So, maybe she killed him. I don't know. Anyway, and this is enjoyment in this material world. This is the nature. So usually you find the names there, but this grave had no name. Maybe she did kill him because she didn't want anybody to know who it was. Yes, Madri. Okay, a realization at the what do you call it? Mortuary. Yes, at the morgue, we see in the West, realization. What is that? There's a name in Sanskrit, Shmashan Vairagya. There's a type of renunciation you feel after coming from the crematorium. It's a type of renunciation you feel. Oh, yeah, actually, it's just ashes. That's all it is. It's the body. And we decorate the dead body. We're very proud of the body. Smashan Vairagya. Yes. Amalagora. Text 7. Okay, let's see. Oh, I don't know. In the Vedas, must be a prophet always paraphrases. In the Vedas, it is said that persons who are attached to demigods to the exclusion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are like the animals who follow the herdsmen even though they are taken to the slaughterhouse. Anybody know that quote? Where it's from? Maharaj, you know that? Where it says that? People who worship the demigods are being taken to the slaughterhouse. Adi Purusha knows. Okay. Like an animal. We don't have the exact quote. Yeah. Any other comments or questions? Sankirtandas. Yes. Anyway, there are different aspects of the super soul. As we said yesterday, there's the external aspect, which is the body of the super soul, the material body. Then there's the subtle body. So in different places, Prabhupada describes that that's the avyaktamurtina. The avyaktamurti, it has an unmanifested form. So there's the gross form, and then there's the subtle form. So often he equates this subtle form with Brahman. Actually, Brahman has many meanings. But the ultimate meaning is energy. It is the energy of the Lord. So the Viratrupa is Brahman. Also the subtle form, the avyaktamurti of Viratrupa is also Brahman. Yeah, and there are verses, there are some verses, I don't exactly know where. It's I think in the second canto where it distinguishes these two types of the gross and subtle form of the Lord. Even in the first canto, third chapter, there's that. It says there's a gross and then there's another subtle manifestation of the Viratrupa, which is unseen, unheard. Yeah, unseen, unheard. Yeah, but the reality is beyond this. Yeah, so the super soul has a gross and a subtle body. So both are there. But now in this chapter, we're going to hear about the reality, the actual super soul, not his gross body or not his subtle body. Madhavan Puri, and then Lila Madhuri, you had something. Oh, it's okay. Amala Gora's question. Yes. Okay, in the Isha Upanishad, mantra 12, it says the demigods go to the lowest regions. Those who worship the demigods, sorry, not the demigods, forgive me. Those who worship the demigods go to the lowest regions. Yes. So this is Sri Isha Upanishad, mantra 12. Okay, so this is in reference to how worshipping the demigods leads you to the slaughterhouse. So Isha Upanishad also says that. Worshipping the demigods leads you there. Any other question or comment on today's verses? Yeah. Yes. Fearless and honest person. Right. When you don't lie or cheat or steal, then you're fearless. Yes, because if you do lie, you have something to fear. You have a lot to fear. What if I said this to one person and that to another, and what did I say to that person anyway? If you forget. Yeah, fearless and honest. Any other questions or comments on these verses? Yes. Concept of being detached. Where is this? Oh, yeah. Last sentence of text 2. Factual reluctance to enjoy such temporary happiness as they afford. This is Krishna's mercy. Yes. Oh, Krishna has sent me this to enjoy. I was suffering. Yes. But Krishna has not sent me this to suffer. When you get happiness, it destroys your longing for Krishna. Yeah. Yeah, so you have to be reluctant even when to enjoy when that comes. Good accommodation, good food. Yes, be reluctant to enjoy. Feel like it's not, I really don't deserve this. But for some reason, Krishna is giving me this facility. So let me not. Okay. So he's giving some practical suggestion how you can avoid being attached to good times. Share it with the other devotees, Abhinandan. Yes. So he's telling us that Super Soul is our conscience, and we'll understand if we're doing the right thing. If, you know, we have a good thing, it's all right to accept it and use it. Or if it's bad for our consciousness, then we'll get some hints. Not only from Super Soul, but I'm sure from other devotees. Amala Gora. And then... neither detached nor attached, yes. Okay, it's a good question. So, how can we be attached and detached at the same time? Devotees, they're not attached to enjoying, and they're also not detached, they're not going to throw it away. So how are we supposed to feel? You go through life, you're not attached, you're not detached, how are you going to live? What's life? Okay. Anybody else? Sankirtan. Yeah, so his point is that we should not find our happiness in the facilities or the external things. Did somebody have their hand up over here? No. Yes, Prabhu. Yuktai Varagya. Yeah. Yes, Yukta Vairagya. That actually, we are attached for Krishna's service and we're detached for Krishna's service. We're not attached for my pleasure, we're not detached for my pleasure. But if it is useful in the service of Krishna, then okay, we accept, but we don't be attached. Because Krishna, if it's Krishna's, that means he may take it away. If we see it that way, then we can't be attached. Because he gives it to us for his service. He takes it away if he thinks we don't need it for his service. Yes, Madri? Sudama? Okay, so she's saying, was detachment an obstacle in the case of Sudama Vipra? Yes, you discussed that. Okay, he was attached to being detached. Yes. He was too attached. Sometimes people are attached to giving up everything and living in Vrindavan. This is also an attachment. Satsarup Maharaj talks about this. He says that sometimes we have to give up our convenient renunciation to serve Krishna. Convenient renunciation. Satsarup Maharaj said that. It's very interesting. Leela Madhuri. Yes. Yes. I've given up everything to sit and chant in Vrindavan and do nothing else. Yes. Right. And Prabhupada says, they do their meditation, they chant Hare Krishna, and they come out and they smoke when they're not doing their nirjan bhajan. So this is the problem. This is a problem. Darshan? Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's Vishnujan Maharaj. Vishnujan Maharaj. First thing he wake up in the morning, is this the instruction of Srila Prabhupada? Yes, go brush my teeth. Go to the bathroom. Okay? Okay, now I'm going to Mangalarti. Is this the instruction of Srila Prabhupada? Yes. Then when it's time to eat, he said, okay, is this the instruction? Yes, okay. Stomach half full with food, one quarter food filled with water, and one quarter with air. This is Prabhupada's instruction. Then time to sleep, nighttime. Okay, Prabhupada said 6 hours sleep. Okay, sleep. So he was always, every step he was thinking, is this the instruction of Srila Prabhupada? So, and he was a very nice devotee, very inspiring for many others. Aspiring devotee. Check and balance. Yes. Yes, we check our Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, and Paramatma. We check all of our decisions and our everyday, every act, every thought we can check. Okay, any other questions or comments on this, on these verses? Otherwise, I have some announcements to make. One announcement is about some things we were discussing yesterday. Divyambar did some research for us about Mahitala. Remember that? It was your question. Mahitala. We found yesterday that there were 15 planetary systems instead of 14 planetary systems. Somehow, in the verses, he counted 15 instead of 14. So the extra one we figured out was Mahitala. And Mahitala means the surface of the earth, or Bhur Loka. So there's also Bhur is mentioned, I believe, as one of the places. So it is part of Bhur Loka. This is in the 27th verse, Mahitala. We found an extra planet here. 27. Yeah, 7 above, 7 below. So I guess Mahitala's in the middle. It's the earthy. Yeah, one in the middle. Okay. Yeah. But generally it said 14. The Bhur, yeah. The earth is beginning of Bhur, Bhur Loka. It's called Bhur. Bhur, yeah. Mahitala means the surface of the earth. Mahim, yes, Mahim. Remember, Mahim means the earth. So Mahitala, the earth, yes. Mahipate, okay. Confirmed. Okay, same line. Mahipate is Parikshit, and Mahitala is where he lives. Okay, then another reference was, remember the word Namanam. Namanam. So that refers to Mahatattva. according to Dravida Prabhu. Both of these answers are coming from Dravida Prabhu. Nomenon. Yesterday the question was about nomenon, phenomenon and nomenon. Nomenon means the Mahatattva. Mahatattva. Now there's another announcement I have to make about there's a change of schedule for Kartik. Because the reason, well, I'll tell you first what's going to happen and then I'll tell you the reason behind it. So what's going to happen in Kartik with Burijan Prabhu is teaching starting from the 4th of October. Now, there's going to be, the change is that there's going to be 5 days a week instead of 4 days a week, and Gopi Pranadana won't be coming. And what's going to happen in this time, 4 weeks' time, is Burijan Prabhu is going to finish the 9th chapter. He's going to go all the way to the end of the 9th chapter of this canto. But yes, so you're in luck. Paramakaran is happy. I don't know about anyone else. Now, the reasoning behind this is that he was unsatisfied with the schedule the way it was because we're advertising it as a course, Kartik course. So the course ends just before the Chatushloki Bhagavatam. So he felt sorry for the people who were taking the course, that they would stop just before the Chatushloki and go home. So therefore, he made this change for the benefit of these people. 4th October, you start, and 29th October, you finish. Yes. Yes. Yes, that's another very good point. Right. Yeah. So I'll bring up these points with Burijan Prabhu. Yeah, we'll have to look into that. We'll have to look into that. This is going to be changed. Everything's changed. But, yeah, 29th is still the same. But what classes are going to be on which days, that will be changed. The verses are changed. And where? That's the first Chatushloki verse. Yeah, it's going to go all the way to the end of the 9th chapter. It's going to go all the way to the end of the 9th chapter. And so this is the change. So I'll bring up these points to Burijan Prabhu that the classroom is too small and about the questions like that. So he's very good at handling questions. So then I'm sure he can answer it in such a way that everyone will be satisfied. But I'll bring these points up to him. And yes, Prabhu. There will be 10th chapter. We'll still have 3 or 4 days because maybe he might need more than 3. He says it's a very complicated chapter, 10th chapter. So, but then the good side to it is that you'll have much more time to study for your exam. Instead of just 2 days, you'll probably have a whole week to study before your exam. So there are good advantages and disadvantages. Yes. Yes, as far as I understand, he's coming on the 11th, around the 11th. So his class will be the last 3 weeks of the Kartik semester. The first week, he won't be teaching. But what does it say? 2 weeks. Oh, okay. So it was supposed to be 3 weeks. And now it's 2 weeks. Oh, Adi Purusha, do you know that information on Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj? Last 2 weeks of Kartik semester. Darshan. October. Yeah, they will start on November 11th. Again, that will be same. That will keep. We'll finish. We'll do the 10th chapter on November 11th and that week, and finish the second canto. And then the 22nd is the exam. So you'll have more time to study. So that's one good thing. Pardon me? Yeah, it will be 10th chapter. We'll start. So actually, we'll give you a whole new schedule of the verses and everything. So this means it's a very austere. Next week is going to be very austere. We have 4 days plus 5 days. The Kartik semester, I'll finish on Thursday. Kartik semester starts on Friday. So it will go for 5 days. So 9 days in a row, first week. But then after it, we'll get 10 days in a row, no class. After October 20. Yes. 10 days in a row. Well, you're not studying and you're not doing the questions, so the other students might need more time. Might want a break. Okay. So this is the schedule. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.